Tom here today?
Yeah, he's here.
I don't know where he is, though. I'm in India. Should we just wait?
We got plenty of time here.
You know, I said I walked in the studio and I said, wow, it smells nice in here. And then Chris Sullivan said, oh, it's me.
I showered.
It's not you showering. Ursula has wearing a new Chanel. And I just went over and it sent like a googly feeling down my spine.
I guess I get to go back to wearing Obsession for Men.
Okay.
You know what, John, a chance to die.
Hold on. You know, it's funny. Is this your new thing now? Is this your new thing? Huh? You got a new thing? You do it.
My news boss would not open here, John.
Oh, I see. Okay.
It said administrator needed.
I
had all sorts of computer issues, so I said, I just go to my desk and open it up there, close it. And so
come on, walking on back. It's a tightly run ship, as you can tell.
You bet.
We were already sunk.
You always pretend I'm late.
Let's see. Governor Inslee uses the state of the state to urge action on mental health, on climate change, and orcas. You're going to play a bunch of this stuff? Let's see. We got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. How many of these cuts have been already played on so many other news stations that we don't need to keep playing these things?
Well, I
want the top of the pot. Okay. I want the cream of the crop. What do you got?
I did my best I made these myself, John.
Oh,
they're handmade.
Handcrafted.
Fresh right out of the oven. All right, here we go.
Just the past few years, our state experienced record high temperatures, record low snowpack in some locations, higher ocean temperatures, and higher acidity in our waters. This is the 11th hour, but it is Washington State's hour to shine. It's a time of great peril, but it is also a time of great promise. And I don't know of any other issue that touches the heart of so many of the things we all care about, our jobs, our health, our safety, and our children's future. But this doesn't have to be our future.
I think the governor I think Todd Herman or Mike Lewis might have said it, that the governor's angling for the position in the EPA, knowing he won't win presidency. But a recent poll, Tom, exiting the 2016 vote for president, 12% of Democrats said climate change is their number one issue.
Yeah.
Only 2% of Republicans said that. And I think the way Inslee looks at this is, have another hot summer, more fires, more wind, more rain, more stuff like that. Weather is the thing that unites all of us. So it'll bring to the top of mind, hey, it seems to be a bigger and bigger problem. We should probably start to do something about it. Another poll was 67% of Americans, 67% now, the majority say that climate change is something that needs to be addressed. So yeah, he's sort of riding this wave right to the position.
That's right. And he's been on this wave for 10 years.
He's failed every single year as far as reducing the CO2 in the state of Washington. But he's still continuing.
He's failed on getting the legislation passed in his own state.
But the legislation that was passed and things that were put into place, apparently we continue to spike with CO2 emissions.
No. Okay, John, you're misrepresenting things, but you do have a grain of truth in that. And that
is true. It has gone up.
This past year, it has gone up, which is going against the standards that the legislature said a decade ago about where we should be by this next year. But the reason for that is because we have this booming economy, and so that's part of the problem. They say it's a temporary thing. Already there's signs that that's cooling down. Uh-huh. But still, okay. You're right. Climate change is a big deal. It's always been a big deal for Inslee, and he is thinking that that is his... He doesn't want to be seen as a one-issue candidate if he runs for president.
Well,
which he still might, and I know you're promoting that.
I am.
However, I do not think that that's going to be enough to, put him in the front ranks, because anybody who's anybody that's running for the Democratic nomination is going to make climate change a big plank.
Right.
The question here is now, as the Republicans have already complained that it's too expensive, his proposal to fight climate change is too expensive for the citizens and too stifling for businesses. And the problem with it is it's a 30-year down the road kind of crisis that's hard for people to wrap their heads around. Even though I think more and more people are beginning to acknowledge that it is maybe something more serious than a far-off fear. But because of that, I just think that it's hard for him to get much traction out of this. Even the legislature, which is now in Democratic hands in both the Senate and the House, they're already saying, well, this is a little too ambitious even for us. But it does send an agenda. And that's one thing I'll give him credit for.
Well, the good news is that the United States produced less CO2 this year than it had in previous years, down 3%.
There you go.
3.5%.
Yeah, that's good.
The average, the per person production of CO2 in 1950, I had the metric tons, and it's actually dropped to where we are lower than we have been in 67 years. So good job, the United States. When it comes to fracking and gas and coal being reduced as well, but it's primarily gas and fracking that has caused the drop in CO2 emissions.
Yeah, but we're not doing nearly enough. I mean, all these reports that have come out worldwide and nationally, we're not doing nearly enough. We're not taking it seriously enough. But I think that speaks, it's the same reason why we're not prepared for an earthquake, despite the fact that we all know an earthquake's coming. We're just not built to be that anticipatory, I'm
right.
afraid.
Well, what country can you point to that's doing well when it comes to CO2 emissions? Germany? Certainly not. France? Certainly not, right?
Well, I don't
everybody
know
that signed the
Germany,
Paris Accord.
The time I spent in Germany, they are spending more time on that. I mean, that is a huge issue in Germany. So I would guess if you have to name a European country, they probably are the best.
They
have right.
Their CO2 levels are going up. The United States coming down.
They're doing a lot with this kind of recycling business. I mean, it is uppermost. When I've spent some time in Germany in the last decade, three or four times there, talking to politicians. That has much more power politically than it does here in this country.
They're building 1,600 new coal plants in Berlin or outside of Berlin. Check with traffic with Sully.
Coal plants?
Yeah, coal burning plants. 1,600 of them.
In Berlin?
Berlin is where it starts, and then they have, throughout Germany, 1,600 additional coal-fired plants. Hey, Sully.
Hey, what's going on, guys?
Are we producing any CO2 out there with the cars?
Yes, and in fact, probably a train that was stuck for a while this morning, but that's too long to get in. I'm not going to give you that until you give me cherry pie, which I know isn't happening. I'm here to do traffic. You know, we're hanging in there right now with the Alaskan Way Viaduct closure. We're still seeing what we've seen the last 3 days. Federal Way to Seattle's at 50 minutes, but 40-plus of those minutes are from South Center in, which means we have a lot of work to do all the way into the downtown exits. West Seattle Bridge hasn't loosened up yet completely. We're looking at the slowing starting at Del Ridge. The rest of the map, though, looks really, really good. So one other place where that's not quite happening, 405 northbound Renton up into Newcastle. Pretty slow, but under 40 minutes on that drive to Bellevue is pretty good. Kai Radio real-time traffic on the threes. I'm Chris Sullivan.
I guess I appreciate that. All right, one last cut from the governor talking about free college.
What? There's more?
Don't forget Jacob Madoff.
Yeah, well, are you right. Sure you don't want to go to the Republican response? We've kind of got the Inslee's big thing was obviously climate, but the if you go down,
you really?
I'm sorry. You do. What
no,
you
no,
want,
no, 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 no.
That's right.
No.
Whose show is this anyway?
No, it's all right. Jacob has something else he wants to say.
I own a lot of underwear.
Okay, well, that has nothing to do with what we're trying to do here. Free college. You want to get the response? It's basically saying the governor, blah, blah, blah.
That's what I just said, right? That it's too expensive for citizens.
Right,
too,
that's it.
Too harsh on businesses.
Free college.
Washington College Promise is our new statewide free college program that guarantees state financial aid to eligible students. We did this because a student's financial challenges should not stand in the way of the pursuit of their dreams.
Yeah, that's that Washington Promise. Dory had some numbers on that, and I don't remember them specifically, but just the number of people that have signed up for that, gotten that, and then those that graduate is very slim, and those that actually have passing grades is also very slim. It's the old idea. If you get something for free, you really don't care about it. So he's calling for free college. I guess if you make under $65,000 or $66,000.
Yeah, something like 70% of whatever the median is. The idea is the proposal is to help more
means
people
tested,
get to college. Yes.
Right. All right. Anything else you want to say on that?
I mean, there is one other thing because
what?
This
What's that?
It's bipartisanship, John. We should applaud this.
Yes.
Mental health.
Right.
Mental health issue is something that both the Democrats and the Republicans prize, grappling with that. And
uh-huh.
So I think that in the budget that he's proposed, that will be the one issue where Republicans and Democrats come together and say, yes, let's go for it.
Mm-hmm. All right. We'll find out. That's just he puts out there. And then, of course, it's going to be kicked back and forth. And it looks like because you have more Democrats that are serving there in Olympia, more of the governor's work will be done. All right. Nancy Pelosi with her winning strategy. The Atlantic looks at it. The nice thing about this article is only 2 pages long. as it points out how Pelosi beat Bush when it came to 2005, when Bush was saying, hey, everybody, Social Security is going to be in big trouble by 2030. We're going to be out of money. And by 2035, we will have exhausted all of our assets, revenue assets, and we will be flat broke. We have to do something about it. Maybe we should start to look into privatizing. Maybe we should look into raising retirement. Maybe we should start to look into those things. Well, Bush was correct because those numbers.
No, Bush was wrong.
Oh,
according to this
article, Social Security is still solvent?
No.
No.
But privatizing
no.
would not solve the issue. That's the dispute that this this article points out.
Well,
what he wanted to do.
Go ahead. We'll do that, and we'll talk about what her policy is, what she's going to try to do to Trump.
For now, yes. Yeah, okay, yeah. So the idea was that Bush, the Republicans have always dreamed in the last two, three decades, I guess, they want to privatize Social Security. They want to change the entire framework of Social Security and privatize it. So the proposal was, because there was clouds on the horizon about Social Security, that this was going to be President Bush's chance to push through the privatization. Now, mm-hmm. the article suggests privatization wouldn't actually solve the Social Security problem, but his plan was, if I bring up privatization, then the Democrats will say, well, if you do that, you got to make sure you do this and this and make the Democrats do all the heavy lifting of changing Social mm-hmm. Security, and the Democrats didn't fall for that.
Yeah.
Pelosi didn't do that, and so then it became, do you want to privatize Social Security or keep it the way it is? And most Americans wanted to keep it the way it is, and now that's being applied to the Trump wall business.
Right, by doing nothing, by not getting into the ring and negotiating.
Yes,
but that's the exact same thing that Mitch McConnell is doing in the Senate.
Yes.
He is just simply staying there quiet, just saying nothing, just do nothing. Absolutely.
Yes.
Go ahead, Obama, you want to bring up a candidate for Supreme Court? That's fine. You can have it constitutionally, you can do that. We don't have to consent. Nowhere in the Constitution says the Senate needs to consent on this. We'll just sit here quietly. We'll just wait. And that's exactly what's happening with the wall.
It's hardball. And the way this article by Peter Beinart, a journalism professor at City U, says is that the Democrats often are the ones that are unwilling to play as rough as the GOP. They cave. They're naive. They say, well, you know, this might look bad if we continue to do that. And he says Nancy Pelosi is the one person who's saying, listen, we can play. If Mitch McConnell can play hardball, so can we. And that's why he's guessing that she'll come out on top with the over the wall dispute. We don't know. I mean, the government shutdown is a government shutdown. And right now it's hurting the president and the Republican Party more, according to polls. I don't know if that could change or not.
I don't see that changing in any way.
You don't? Okay.
No. How would they flip that around?
Well, my guess is that at some point, the federal employees who are out and protesting mm-hmm. will end up, you know, they're mad at Trump right now and mad at the Republicans for not opening up the government. However, at some point, they may say, okay, enough already. We've been out
make
for
an offer.
6 months or
right,
something.
Right, make an offer.
We'll see.
Okay. By the way, Social Security will be depleted by 2030, even sooner than that.
Well, yeah.
So what would be a possible solution would be raise the retirement and then also allow Americans to take the money that they have earned and use it to invest on their own as opposed to the government playing their parent for them. Because Roosevelt set this up in 1936, 37, and it was only supposed to be for widows and for kids, right? Survivors. Then it can expand it and expand it. So now everybody's getting it. Everybody gets Social Security. We don't have enough people paying in. And eventually the thing goes tease up.
Well, eventually, if nothing happens, but my guess is, just like with climate change, the closer we get to the finish line, in effect, we'll have to adjust our legislation.
But Jacob is paying into Social Security. He's not going to see it. I'm paying into it. And at the top of your Social Security thing that you get once a year, it says you can expect about 77 or 73% of what you could have gotten. So they continue to drop that number down. Every single year, they drop it down more and more. So I keep paying into it. And we're just basically allowing old people to live off the young people, and now we've gotten down to a 2-to-1.
Remember, the old people, you know, help support the older people. I mean, it is a generational thing. But you're right. It's going to need some kind of legislative action. Raising taxes is an option. Privatizing, you know, is the Republican solution. We'll have to see where it ends up.
Why does the government have to take my money and save it for me?
They don't have to. We decide. If we're the government, we decide we want this.
We're not
this.
The government, Tom. We had nothing to do with
government.
That. That was Roosevelt
Social
pushing
Security.
That thing
I know, and the popularity, listen, the popularity of Social Security. The Republican Party ran against Social Security in the 40s and 50s until they realized, hey, wait a minute, a lot of us kind of like that.
Well, they continue
so they
to expand it because, Tom, if somebody
That's
else
right.
is paying the bill, everybody's going to keep eating and drinking. Everybody, hey, another round? Can we get another round? Let's get another round. And then
That's
the bill
right.
shows up and the people, holy crap,
okay,
look at the amount of money.
You ask me, why do we still have it? It's because we as a country have decided we like it. Because every time it comes up, you know, for a vote, people are panicking about it. You're right. It needs to be addressed at some point.
Don't take my money and invest it in some crappy thing and get me less than 1% return on the market. Don't do that to me. Let me spend my own money. I earned it. Let me invest it.
Then you can convince the rest of the country that we don't want Social Security and that everyone's out on their own. I don't think you can do that.
Well, the concern is always, well, what about the poor people or the dumb people that don't know what they're doing?
And the old people. Oh, silly concerns.
Old people are dumb? Is that what it is? They don't know what they're doing with their money?
They're in double trouble.
All right. The gig economy. Apparently, everybody overreacted to it. It's not going to be wiping out as many people as expected. Kind of an interesting piece in The Atlantic saying that the reason
short.
It was... What's that?
And also conveniently short.
I know. Thank you for that, Jacob. You got to understand something, folks. Jacob finds the stories in The Atlantic, and I'm like, oh sweet. And I zip, 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 on the right. I'm scrolling with the mouse, scrolling. Yeah. I'm like... 28, 36, 45 pages.
You treat them like your terms of service agreements on your phone?
Oh, my God. It's worse. Interesting take on this is that why, Tom, did they overestimate that the gig economy would have a bigger damaging effect to just everybody in the U.S. economy?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know why. They just said that the people that came up with the version said 5 percentage points in the decade up to 2015, that 5 percentage point rise, and that was expected to continue. And now they've looked at the numbers again with more information to say, actually, it was more like 1-2%, and it really is not that big a deal, that most people that are in the gig economy are not in the gig economy alone.
Yes.
That the people that are driving Uber are not driving Uber cars or the rideshare stuff completely. They are not all in. Mm-hmm. It's supplementary.
Yes.
And so because of that, it doesn't have nearly the impact on the economy that they were heretofore suggesting.
But they also pointed to the fact that the people that were making those predictions were living on both coasts, West Coast, East Coast.
Yes,
right.
That's
and
another factor.
I mean, they were surrounded by it. So as far as they were concerned, every time they turned around, someone was out of a gig economy.
Yeah, that's right. So the perception is that allowed them to pursue it. And that's when they thought at 5%, that seemed logical. It turns out it was one quarter of that.
All right, let's see. Stories to get to. A typo could get this guy tons of alcohol and a lap dance.
Now.
What do you mean now? You've been to a bachelor party?
Yes, I have.
And
lap dances were had by all. We'll be right back.
Alrighty, Laura's Home Loans. Thanks, Laura Keel, for sponsoring the Tom and Curly Show. Get in touch with Laura if you need any mortgage. 833-ASK-LAURA. That's 833-ASK-LAURA. Laura's Home Loans. Got the best people working for her in the business. Alright. Tom, are you concerned about robots taking over?
No, in fact, I anticipate them. Mm-hmm. I would stay in this hotel for no other reason than to have robots, you know, flying around. 243 robots available.
But not anymore. Didn't they get them out of them?
Well, thing is, they've got rid of half of them. The story is the robot hotel loses its love for robots.
Well, here's in 2015, they were all in love with it.
The Henna Hotel, which translates to strange hotel in Japanese, lives up to its name. Just meet the front desk staff.
Please ask me your request, but don't ask me a difficult question because I am a robot.
Yes, that's an English-speaking dinosaur robot designed to appeal to kids. Also at reception, an almost creepy humanoid programmed to speak Japanese and bow. There's a robotic bag check, even a robot concierge.
What do you want to know? Check in, check out, breakfast?
Breakfast.
Breakfast is a buffet style. It opens from 7 a.m. to 10 p.m.
Hideo Sawada is the man in charge. We asked if robots could really replace, say, a concierge who has actually tasted food.
Isn't hospitality about connecting with people? Isn't that an important part of the hotel business?
For five-star hotels that are selling high-end service, human staff are essential, he told us. But for three- or four-star hotels, you need comfortable lodging and a basic level of communication at a reasonable price. Sawada says having robots fill jobs can help reduce labor costs by about 70%. Here, rooms start at roughly $80 a night.
You talk about this being a low-cost hotel, but having this sort of investment in these robots seems quite expensive. Yes, robots don't come cheap, he acknowledged, but compared to a year's worth of personnel costs, they are quite cost-effective. And as technology improves, I think they'll become quite price-competitive.
Yeah, yeah, really? Well, guess what?
A mere 3 years later,
they've decided the robots are given pink slips.
So about half of them, they've already gotten rid of. They had, this seems a little bizarre to me, John, but they had puppy dancers mm-hmm. that, you know, sort of entertain people in the lobby. And almost all of them are broken down. So they're sort of like hunched
not
over
working.
In the corners and pushed aside. They did not keep pace with how sophisticated Alexa is, for instance, in terms of conversations, and people would get more and more frustrated because they couldn't answer simple questions. Hey, my Alexa at home would tell me this. Why can't you tell me this? They talk about this one particular guy who kept getting awakened about once an hour every night by this Churi, the robot that was supposed to be responding to all of his needs. It turns out why? He was a heavy snorer, and so they kept interpreting his snores as, oh, what do you want, sir? I don't understand your question. He goes, whoa, 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 and he wakes him up. There are all sorts of things. What could go wrong, you know, it did go wrong. They you could only reach about 24 of the 100 rooms because of height problems that the robots had. It just turned out the technology was not ready for the difficulties of what they had to have.
Well, they are taking over in stores across the East Coast. The giant food stores have hired a robot by the name of Marty. And Marty's job is to let everybody know that there's a cleanup in aisle three.
He's scanning the floor to look for any type of slips or trip hazards. And if he finds anything, he'll stop and he'll page for assistance to have it cleaned up. And he'll be creating a safer environment for customers and associates.
And allowing us to fire two people.
He's going to be able to look at out of stocks on the shelf and report back to us what those items are.
That's something Doug used to do.
And if they're located in the building, he'll generate a report for an associate to come out to replenish those items.
There you go. And finally, he also talks about how Marty will interact with people.
Many times people are ambivalent to him and just walk right by. And then there's a large majority of people that are very excited to see a robot in the store. They get very excited about it, and they tend to take pictures of it, video of it, and selfies with the robot. It's very cool.
They being people that study this sort of stuff, said that eventually robots will be in the classroom. And the reason people like to learn from robots is because they find robots are non-judgmental and are friendlier than regular humans.
I can't imagine they'd be friendlier. See, that's really interesting about teachers. There are teachers that are very friendly and welcoming, and there are very teachers that are very hard-ass, you know, about it. And I would think the robot would never be friendlier. They just wouldn't be as judgmental, and maybe depending on how comfortable you are in the classroom, that could benefit. I would find it. My guess is it would be like the Churi who keeps waking me up because I'm snoring. I'm not sure that they can accommodate the kinds of questions that that students might have. That I think would be tricky.
Well, they said the robot would be the only thing in the class. Supplemental to the teacher.
Gotcha.
So if the robot would go up and down the aisles, and if you're having additional trouble with something, it looks at the math thing, and then it would say, have you considered, you know, carrying the four?
Now that's the kind of thing that TAs or teaching assistants do at the college level, and maybe that's, you know, kind of the more rudimentary levels they could adjust. I just am amazed there are that many spills in aisle four that this is actually worth its trouble. I mean, it just seems like, wow, there can't be that many that you need a robot to kind of announce to the world this is what's happening.
But I guess they look at it for the liability's sake. If there's a spill, if somebody spills something, if somebody slips and falls, then you're in big trouble.
I suppose.
He's checking inventory.
That makes a lot of sense. Yeah, he says, oh, listen, we're you know, our Tide Pods are low or something. So anyway,
Tide Pods. Wow. They've
been in the news.
Oh, that's what it is. I saw a really interesting article. It might have been Popular Mechanics. They were trying to determine. They said the robot's face should be friendly, but not too friendly. So there's a demarcation line where some people say, let's keep a robot looking like a robot. And other people say, no, you know what? Let's go all in and have it look like a human being and have it tilt its head and close its eyes because you relate better to it if it has human features, as opposed to going sort of a sci-fi thing with big googly eyes or a weird little mouth or something.
That's sort of what this grocery store thing is. It's like a big, tall, looks like a robot, but it has these big eyes that are googly eyes.
Googly eyes. Yeah. They say if it's too friendly looking, then people spend more time wanting to take pictures with it and bother it a little bit and doesn't let it do its job. I think there's a robot at Microsoft on one particular campus. And when you get off the elevator, if you don't know where the room is that you're supposed to go to, or if you don't know where the meeting is, the robot rolls up to you and then you can say, hey, where is the meeting regarding, you know, international security or something?
Yeah.
Oh, that's in room 314. So the robot lets you know. And they have them. They got them there. They're all ready to roll. The nice thing is they'd never be able to replace us.
And why is that, John?
Because this show cannot be programmed.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Right, Jacob?
You don't think computers can run off the rails as well as we can?
No, and it would seem false not organic.
Right.
Okay, so we're going to be safe for the next couple of years anyway.
Okay, let's see. The guy gets a message sent to him. There's a typo in it, and it ends up inviting him someplace that he's never been before, and he doesn't know anybody who's going to be there. He puts up a GoFundMe campaign in order to raise funds to be able to go to it. And now,
whoa, Nelly.
He's on his way.
And this gives Tom a chance to talk about to the bachelor parties he's been to. I've been to one.
Yes, that makes two between the two of us.
Shocking to the audience. We'll be right back. Online Trade Academy text line 98973. Come on in, everybody. Lodell, I'd love to hear from you. You can also write to us at mynorthwest.com, but the text line seems to be taking over. Online Trading Academy text line at 98973. Okay, you want to put these Netflix things to the back burner and take care of this?
Yeah.
Okay, just do that. So typo lands the guy invited to a party. Now, he was not supposed to be the person that receives the invite, but something happens and he ends up finding himself with the invite, and it's to a bachelor party. He doesn't know the person to be
never
soon to be married.
Right, never has. His name, Will Novak, is the same as the name of a childhood friend of the guy who's getting married.
Oh.
This guy who doesn't know anybody, he's living in Arizona.
Yeah.
The party's happening in Vermont.
I see.
It was Monday night when Will Novak received a rather interesting email.
By the way, how does the news find out about this? Somebody has to call them up, right?
Yes, and or it went public because you mentioned a GoFundMe campaign.
Ah.
So once you hit social media.
Okay.
Said, urgent, reply right away. Angelo's bachelor party, respond right away. And I said, who the heck is Angelo?
He opened the email and saw it was a group of guys planning a bachelor ski trip to Vermont for their friend Angelo.
And they're going
to
drink all weekend. And then it says, but we still haven't heard from the following guys. And one of the names on there was William Novak, my name. And then it clicked. I said, oh, one of their friends must have a similar email address to mine. And they made a typo.
And that's exactly what happened. The email was originally meant for Will Novak in Brooklyn, New York.
My friend Angelo, he's my close friend growing up, his brother mistakenly sent out the email to another William Novak.
So I replied within 5 minutes and I said, guys, this is the Will Novak in Phoenix, Arizona. I'm from the desert. I don't know how to ski. Vermont is a very far way away. All that being said, count me in. I'm there. I'm there for Angelo.
But Will...
Good guy. Funny. He sounds better than that other guy.
Will from Arizona didn't really think he'd be going.
2 days later, they respond back and they're like, we don't know if you're serious, but we're serious. You better show up.
Yeah.
A close friend convinced him to put up a GoFundMe page. Will calculated the total amount of the trip would come out to $750.
So last night at 6 p.m., I put up a GoFundMe and I put it on my Facebook and we sat down to have our family dinner. And by the time dinner was over, we had over $1,000.
I'm still in shock, actually. That he's coming, that it went so fast.
So he got the money, he's ready to go. Doesn't know how to ski, but he's going to spend some time with five or six guys he doesn't know.
And the thing is, this has gotten so much publicity. You have now his representative in Congress, and the senator from Connecticut is saying, hey, this is a great idea, everybody ought to pitch in. And he realizes now he's making money hand over fist. People are still contributing to this. So any money that he doesn't spend on this trip, he's going to donate to the newlyweds. So that'll be nice.
Okay. And the elected officials got involved in this?
Yes, a representative and a senator. And I can tell you're thrilled.
Yeah. That's what we elected you for. Sully! I nominate you to talk about traffic.
All right. I accept. Not begrudgingly, but I accept wholeheartedly.
Okay.
Looking at the drive right now, we're actually calming down nicely because of the Alaskan Way Viaduct closure. We're still dealing with the two trouble spots, as you would imagine. The final couple of miles getting from Albro into the heart of downtown Seattle, still crawling into downtown that way. About a 30-minute drive from South Center into Seattle, though, isn't that bad. If you want to avoid all that slowdown, eject at the Boeing Access Road and take Airport Way. Take that all the way into downtown. It's even eased underneath the I-90 corridor, so that's a viable option for you. And also the West Seattle Bridge is still slammed. Kyle Radio real-time traffic on the threes. I'm Chris Sullivan.
Thank you, Sully.
To give you a sense of how good this guy is, though, they said, isn't that going to be awkward, you hanging out with a bunch of guys you don't know? And he says, my whole life is awkward. I spent high school playing Dungeons & Dragons.
We never got a chance to talk bachelor parties.
Oh, yes, darn.